You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Oh, it's Janice.
No,
it's pronounced Janice.
Janice Anderson.
Stupid.
Janice Akempo.
Antiterson.
There's a financial company here in Colorado called Janus Capital. Sweet. But it's with an U instead of an I.
I bet it sucks.
That sounds like a
but it's really fast.
That sounds like the company the bad guy owns in a Bond movie.
New York Bozo! New York Bozo! New York Bozo!
I gotta get my biceps a little bigger.
Yeah, you can always work on that.
Oh, I could sure use a hot dog with chili.
You know what time the game starts?
Hey, you got any left-handed footballs? We need to fire him.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Good thing I'm in shape.
You got any eligibility left?
I got some advice for y'all. Take 2 weeks off, then quit.
Welcome back, Packer fans, to another edition of the Pack to the Future podcast. I think we're legally allowed to say the Packers are on a winning streak. Woo. How about that?
That's good.
Woo! Who'da thunk it? I am Brian Fonfara, your host for the evening, as John Jameson had, as he called it, better things to do. He said he didn't really care about the listeners and just wanted to be himself. Now he's off at the Bucks game watching Giannis and Jabari. I have no idea what they're doing right now, but that is what he's doing. So to my left, I have Dusty Evely. How you doing, dude?
Hey, I'm good, man. Like you said, we're talking about a winning streak, and we're talking about a winning streak, and we just watched a game in the snow in Lambeau in December. I'm riding high, man.
All right, and to my other left, I have Jordan Peck. Jordan, last week you argued that the Packers could afford to lose a game because of the Lions' schedule. The Lions beat the Saints. Do you still think that?
Well, you're just throwing fire right at me right out of the gate, man. That's a lot of.
I got a really nice intro. I got to ease in.
Just questioning all of my opinions right off the bat. Yeah, we can.
I'm just
sticking
curious.
To my guns. I'm not changing after 1 week. That's not how I roll. I hope the Packers lose this. No, I'm just kidding.
I know exactly how you roll. All right. Well, as I mentioned, no John, so that means we have a really fun show for you today. And we'll start that off with, as John calls it, our patented coin toss segment. I'll go ahead and tell you right now, it is not patented. I don't know if I've explained this on air before, but I took it from a video maker for a different sport, so it's all good.
For shame.
It's all good.
Shameful. Yes. Shameful.
For shame. For shame. Just stole it. Just stole it like it was a candy bar. All right. Well, let's get going in our coin tosses. First, we're going to see Jordan.
Do you steal candy bars, Brian? Like on a regular basis, do you steal candy bars?
Define regular
basis. It's just that phrase. It just implies that you steal them on a regular basis. It's fine. Let's move on. I just want to know what kind of criminals I'm in cahoots with here.
After the show, I'll need you to define regular basis, and then I can answer the question. But we don't have time for that right now, so. Any police-related entities, this is not an admission of guilt. All right, in our first coin toss this week, we have Dusty versus Jordan, and we're talking about the front seven. The news came out today that Nick Perry will not be healthy for this game, as he just had surgery on his hand, hopes to play again in 2016, but that is yet to be determined. Guys, Nick Perry is a key in this defense to sealing off the edge and keeping running backs and rushing quarterbacks inside the pocket. So I ask you, with the stable of outside linebackers that we have at our disposal for Sunday, is there any way that this front seven can keep Russell Wilson in the pocket and not just get circles run around them? So Jordan, I'm going to flip this coin. If it is heads, you are going to tell me that they will be just fine. And if it is tails, you will tell me why we're looking at doom and gloom on Sunday. It is heads. We're going to be just fine, Jordy. All peachy. Tell me why.
Well, here's one reason is before the podcast, you know, in all of the podcast preparation that I do, I happen to check the Green Bay weather report, and the forecast again is similar to what we had this past weekend. I think low 20s, snow showers. It's going to be a tough field to move around on. We saw Osweiler and Rodgers this past Sunday have a lot of trouble moving around. You know, they picked up a couple first downs. You can expect the same of Wilson. I mean, Wilson's a great running quarterback. He's going to have some effect. Do I think he's going to control the game with it? I don't. I really don't. We're missing Nick Perry, so it's going to be you know, kind of. You really got to show up if you're talking about guys like Jake Ryan, Jayron Elliott, Detone Jones, even Clay Matthews, if he's playing some outside, they have to be very disciplined. This is not their first rodeo against Russell Wilson. They know what he's capable of. They've seen him do these things to him before. But I think just keying in on him this week, I think the Packers can be okay with that. They're going to have to make Russell Wilson beat him with their arm, beat them with his arm. And I think they'll be all right. I think those guys can step up and fill the void for Perry this week.
All right, Dusty, a word in edgewise.
First of all, Jordan apparently does research for this like a nerd. Like a nerd, Jordan. Research for the podcast.
I'm just looking up to you, my mentor, Dusty.
Thank you, Jordan. I appreciate that. I mean, it's hard to look at this team. Me and Jordan were talking before the show about watching the Seahawks game this past week. And before the game, I was like, all right, man, well, you know, Packers got them this next week. Seahawks are coming off a really bad loss to the Bucs where they put up 5 points. I'm going to kind of watch this, kind of scout this a little bit. We're going to see how this goes. And then the Seahawks just laid waste, just obliterated the Panthers, who are not a great team this year, but still a ridiculous performance. Wilson was injured earlier in the year. He looks better now. He's moving around a little better. Like, the key to what the Packers need to do is they need to be able to get pressure so that the receivers are not running around all day without sacrificing their lanes. And right now they can't do that. Like, Mike Daniels is a man possessed because Mike Daniels is just insane. But no one else can really get pressure on a regular basis from the interior, which means sometimes you have to sacrifice some guys on the exterior. And you do that against a guy like Wilson, he's going to burn you. And like you said, Perry was probably our best run defender this year. He was a good pass rusher. He obviously, when he came back with the club in his hand, he obviously was not the same. He wasn't exactly Reggie White with the club out there. So you got Elliott, who's been inconsistent, and you've got Ryan, who's been slightly injured, and you've got, I mean, just... You got Fackrell probably out there. Like, you just have guys who are inexperienced, and you also have a pass rush that's hard time getting anything done. I have a really, really, really bad feeling that we are going to get burned by Wilson on the ground this week.
All right. Not bad, guys. Not bad. I feel guilty for putting Jordan on the spot to kick off this podcast, so I'm going to give the point to him week.
Like I've been getting a lot of pity points. Like, I'd like one time to just say, man, you just knocked that argument out of the park, man.
Well, maybe make one compelling argument. I mean, do a good job at your job, and we'll reward you
for
it.
That's fair.
I don't think that's true, because I haven't been rewarded yet. I also don't do good at my job. So, it's fine. It's fine. I get it.
Those who can't do... podcast. All right.
Accurate.
Dusty, try to do a good job at your job while debating me this time.
No.
All right. Fair enough. All right. We're going to be talking about Jordy Nelson here. Mike McCarthy had some very kind words to say about Jordy Nelson, something to the effect of, I don't know what more he has to do to prove that he is back. Strong words. So, is Jordy Nelson fully back? I mean, I guess we have to define back as to his 2013-14 levels, where he was just a dominant force in this league. So, Dusty, I'm going to flip this coin. If it is heads, Jordy is back. If it is tails, Jordy is not quite there. It is heads. Jordy's back.
I mean, he looks better. We talked earlier in the season about how not only was his top-end speed not there, but he just was slower out of his breaks. Didn't seem to trust his legs, didn't seem to trust his knee. I've seen that come back, man. We've had some, I don't think he had any this week, but over the past few weeks, he's had some quick screens thrown his way, where basically it was him and Cobb against, say, three guys or something. And Cobb would take out one, and Nelson's job was to make a guy miss, and that's something he couldn't do earlier in the year. And he was able to do that this past couple weeks. He's able to, those quick cuts, the top end speed maybe isn't quite back, and I'm not sure if it's actually coming back, but like those quick cuts and tight quarters are what made him really good, kind of getting that release off the line that gave him separation even without the speed. And I've seen that come back over the past few weeks. So, I mean, he's had to do some things a little differently, but there have been enough shades of the old Jordy over the past few weeks that lead me to believe that, yeah, he's back. I mean, he's never going to recapture what he was because he's a 30-year-old man. He's coming off an injury. But, yeah, I feel comfortable saying, yes, Jordy Nelson is back.
All right, my rebuttal, and I'm not even going to say anything bad about Jordy Nelson because the stats speak for themselves. 69 receptions, 872 yards, 10 touchdowns through 12 games for a guy coming off an ACL injury last year. That's really impressive. It really is. But by definition, I don't think you can quite say that he is back, because if you're saying he's back, you're talking about one of the top 10, maybe even top 5 receivers in this league, and he's not quite there at this point. He's not in that number one group. You can find 5 receivers that you'd rather have than him right now. And the reason for that is he's a different receiver. He can't take the top off the defense right now, and he may be able to do that next year. You know, some of these ACL injuries take, you know, 2 full years to completely recover from, so he may gain more of that speed that he used to have by next season and start taking the top off some defenses again. But right now, you're not seeing that. You're not seeing him blow by guys anymore. On the deep balls that go his way, he's not quite catching up to them like he used to. And the other thing is you're not seeing that back shoulder kind of turnaround corner fade on the sideline that we always used to see between him and Rodgers. So part of this may be he and Rodgers don't quite have the same chemistry just from that full year off. I don't know, but I don't think you're quite seeing the full Jordy Nelson right now. But this version is nothing to complain about, if we're being completely honest. The numbers I just said, like, he's just been absolutely fantastic this year. More of an Anquan Boldin, Larry Fitzgerald type, which is fine. It's just a different receiver. So, no, it's almost like getting a new acquisition as opposed to getting the old Jordy back.
All right. I guess it's my job to determine the winner of this.
Should we really let him do this, Dusty?
I'm comfortable with it. I might get a pity vote here, so I'm holding out some hope.
I tell you what, no, impressive arguments from both. I'm going to go with Brian here. I agree more with that side of the argument. I thought I did a good job of arguing it. This, the Jordy we had this year, if we're not getting the deep threat Jordy, this team is, I mean, we're still getting great production out of him, and this offense is much better than it was last year. So, and if, you know, best case scenario, he gets that back. If not, if this is what we get of Jordy for the next few years, sounds good to me. I mean, this is great. If we can dink and dunk with Jordy 10, 15 yards down the field and still let him be a 1,000-yard receiver, I mean, that's, you're never going to say no to that. So I'm going to go with Brian.
For the record, I also would have sided with Brian. I've said a number of times that Nelson is one of the best as far as like knowing where the sideline is, body control, one of the best sideline receivers I've seen since Chris Carter. And like Brian said, we haven't seen some of that. Some of those back shoulder throws that you need that. We haven't seen some of that this year. But once that comes back to his game, it's going to be a modified game. I'm really excited to see what he does from here because he's got the intelligence and the talent to remake himself as a receiver. And it's pretty exciting to watch.
Yep. Yep. Jordan, I really appreciate the point, and you both made good points after, but you just gave a point based on merit, and for that reason, I don't think we're going to let you choose any more winners.
That's how John votes. Literally all the time, that's how John votes. That's the only way he votes.
Sure. Jordan gets the point today because I like the shirt he's wearing. That's more like John.
He is wearing a really nice shirt, though. Jordan, oh, I think, man, you win this next point.
I got to give a shout out to John because I talked to him on the phone yesterday and he told me he actually listened to last week's podcast.
Man. It's a Christmas miracle.
Bringing his total number of listens on our podcast up to 1.
Above and beyond. Impressive. Above and beyond, that guy.
John, I'm so proud of you, buddy. I could spit.
Just grows up and he grows up and he grows up.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, Jordan.
Yes.
It's your turn to step into the ring with me, buddy.
Can't wait.
All right. All right. We are going to talk running backs here. I think all of the Packer fan base is in favor of James Starks being demoted at this point. He's just been, you know, he does well in pass protection, I guess, but everything else, he's just done. So we want to talk about who should be getting the majority of the running back snaps moving forward, and whether that be Christian Michael, newly acquired from the Seahawks, or Ty Montgomery, who's been kind of in and out of that role throughout the season. So I'm going to flip this coin. If it is heads, I am going to say Christian Michael. If it is tails, I'm going to say Ty Montgomery. And it is tails. I get Ty Montgomery. All right. I have a couple arguments for this. One is that Ty Montgomery knows this offense better than Christian Michael does because he's been in it for 2 years. He hasn't been in as a running back for as long, but even so, he's been a running back for more than half of this season, I guess. So he knows the assignments. He knows the blocking patterns. He knows all of that stuff much better than Christian Michael does. So you can put Ty Montgomery in at running back when it's a passing play, when it's a running play, whatever it be. Christian Michael, you can't quite do that yet because you can't risk him just blowing a block and Aaron Rodgers getting leveled, especially against a few of the defenses that we still have to face, that being the Seahawks, the Lions, the Vikings, all of whom have pretty damn good defenses. So it's really important to protect Aaron Rodgers in those games. Notice that I did not mention the Bears because of obvious reasons. The other thing is he's shown more burst than Christian Michael has, and a bit more consistency than Christian Michael has. I thought Michael had a few really good runs on Sunday. I really wanted to see more of him. But they ended up going with Ty Montgomery instead, and it worked out really well. He had a couple really big first down runs, that really extended those fourth quarter drives that eventually won the game for us. So, if there's a guy that's proven himself so far and a guy that's proven he can take advantage of his opportunities and a guy that's really earned it more than the other, it's Ty Montgomery.
All right,
Jordan.
I agree with some of the stuff you have to say. I mean, when you talk about experience with the offense, I mean, you obviously can't discount that. And certainly our head coach and most head coaches wouldn't either. You know, Montgomery's been around longer. You'd expect him to be a equal, if not better, part of the offense. Now, when you're talking about, you know, burst, definitely Montgomery's got some burst. But you watch this past game and the carries that Michael got, he was hitting the hole extremely hard. Like, I'd say he was hitting it harder than even Montgomery usually does during a game. Montgomery's a smart runner, but so is Michael. If Michael, back when he played for Seattle, can get 4 yards a carry behind that offensive line, you know that you know this guy's got some ability. So I think in order to really see that ability come out, he's got to be getting more than just a couple carries. I think what we said, like 10 or 11 snaps he got this past game. That's got to go up. You know, whether he gets 10 or 11 carries, I don't know, but I mean he's got to be on the field more. He's a weapon. He can be a big weapon for this offense. Not to mention, he's playing the team that kicked him to the curb after having a great start to the season. So you got to believe this dude is going to be jacked up for this game and wanting to run hard against his old team. He's got something to prove, and I think he should take advantage of that. Take advantage of that energy. You got to believe he's going to be extra motivated for this one. So for that, if you know, I don't know, knowing Mike McCarthy, I see very little chance of Michael getting most of the snaps or most of the carries, but it needs to be about, you know, for me, like a 60-40 with Montgomery to Michael. Yeah, we need Michael on the field, even having both those guys on the field. They ran some crazy sets against Philadelphia, too. So they have both those guys out there. Just two weapons in the backfield that those guys have to worry about. And this offense just becomes tougher to deal with.
Word. All right, Dusty.
All right, guys. Good arguments, both of you. I'm going to give this one and the whole victory to Jordan.
Wow.
Jordan, some really good points, but mainly it's just because I really like your hair today. So, you know, take your victory lap, fella.
When did John get here?
It's looking solid today.
It's on point. I'm sorry for those people who can't see it, but Jordan does look very nice today. But yeah, no, good points by both of you. Brian, I did really like the Montgomery knowing the offense a little better. But it was really, really well done. It's really good points on both sides.
You want to know something we can all agree on?
Hmm.
It's time for James Starks to hang up his jersey and get himself an awesome t-shirt. A t-shirt from Pride and Glory Clothing, a company that Jordan can tell us more about.
I can tell you more about, and I will tell you more about. Yes, our sponsor, PrideandGloryClothingCompany.com. Guys, it's getting close to Christmas time. You know you have that Packers fan on your Christmas list. You need to get that present for. Well, I'll tell you what. There's actually a special that Pride and Glory has going right now. I talked last week about the wristbands, the stocking stuffers, you know, that you can get from these guys. Well, if you buy a Pride and Glory 2 t-shirt, that's a Pride and Glory 2 t-shirt, you will get a free wristband with the order. So we're not only are you getting a great shirt, you're getting just a wristband that you can wear to your work, probably, out in the town, you're going out, you can wear it all the day, you can wear it when you're going to bed, you can give it to anybody. So check out PrideandGlory63.com for all the good Packers memorabilia, apparel, shirts, sweatshirts. PrideandGlory63.com.
Those wristbands, by the way, are organic and can prevent cancer. So
this is proven.
Pick
this
them
has been
up.
Proven.
Yeah.
All right, I'm here with Lars Russell of FieldGoals.com, the Seahawks SB Nation blog. Lars, how you doing?
I'm good, Brian. I'm excited, man. I'm excited as Aaron Rodgers was when he learned that Earl Thomas would be out for this game. I'm excited as Melissa McCarthy when Mike leaves the home. I'm as excited as Golden Tate when he hears the words simultaneous possession. I'm just looking forward to this game.
Oh, my goodness. I've gotten in about 10 words edgewise so far, and you already brought up the Fail Mary. This is not bode well.
I think all signs are forward.
All right, well, instead of talking about our contentious past, let's talk about our unknown future. Seahawks are coming into town, into Green Bay on Sunday, and I got some questions for you.
For sure.
So we're gonna start with Earl Thomas breaking a bone. He's out for the year, tweeting that he's contemplating retirement. Just how big of a loss is this for your defense?
But there's no question it's big. I mean, Earl Thomas has been – he's kind of the cornerstone of the whole kind of Pete Carroll Seahawks. He was the second draft pick. He was the first-round pick in 2010 after Russell Okung. And Pete Carroll being a defensive guy, specifically a defensive back guy, Earl Thomas was kind of like the tree from which the rest of the branches grow. You know, Cam Chancellor was in that same draft. But those kind of two guys together perform the backbone of that secondary that Pete Carroll uses to such effect. The three deep zones with the free safety kind of riding high. Earl Thomas's kind of quick reaction and tenacity and kind of even the gambling mentality he has where he takes risks on passes, just trying to see what he sees. He makes quick breaks on receivers is what allows, you know, with that athleticism as well as his reading ability, allows that defense to function. He's in the past described it as, you know, all four of those guys are kind of like connected by a string. So when one guy is in one place, it really allows the other people to do what they need to do. Cam Chancellor can play high up in the box and break down the running game and also cover the seams and the flats because they all trust Earl Thomas to be taking care of that deep third. I think a number of people pointed this out this week, but Seattle is, I think, twice as good as any other team in the NFL this year on defending passes in the deep third. And that's really credit to Earl Thomas. And most people don't try them, and when they do, it's either a hard hit or an interception, you know, or a pass that's thrown errantly because the quarterback's trying to avoid the shot. I think Seattle has allowed four passes in that zone all season complete, and two of them came after Earl Thomas left the game on Sunday night. So it's a big deal. At the same time, I think the Seahawks are well poised to be able to weather it. I mean, Stephen Terrell has been in the system for a while. We've seen guys before come in, Byron Maxwell, Walter Thurman, guys taking that learning from Pete Carroll, from Chris Richard, who was the defensive coordinator and who was a defensive back under Carroll way back at USC. So they've all been learning the system, and Terrell has kind of soaked that up. He's got more speed, at least going by his combine score, than Earl Thomas. So if he's going to be able to put the mental game together and the rest of the guys can trust him, I think they can be effective, if not as effective defensively.
All right. Switching gears to your offense, Russell Wilson, who Wisconsinites know very well from his 1 year, with the Badgers. Struggled with some injuries earlier in the year. Would you say he's back to vintage Russell, where he's going to be able to escape the pocket, make some crazy throws that no human should be able to, kind of run his way around and through this set of linebackers?
Wilson looks pretty close. I mean, you know, he's definitely been able to employ his legs for forward gains more the last few weeks than he had earlier in the year, you know, when he was kind of really just sitting duck back there in the pocket and could barely spin away. You know, so we've seen some of that. I don't think he's quite as quick with the cuts, but his decision-making, you know, moving around the pocket or outside the pocket is still very good. And you know, he never lost any I think, except for the week against the New Orleans Saints when he had a torn pectoral, or at least a strain in his pectoral. He had, you know, he wasn't missing anything from the arm, so he's just making the throws all year. He just didn't have that extra element that forced defenses to account for his mobility. So he's improved at the same time as some of the health around him, as well as the offensive line has been uneven. They lost. They only put up 5 points in Tampa Bay 2 weeks ago. But for the last 4 or 5 weeks, otherwise, the offense has been really well clicking. Wilson's, you know, kind of a low-key MVP candidate. I mean, some people have talked about how he's never going to win it because his numbers are so far down. But, you know, if Seattle had had any other quarterback suffer those injuries, it's probably unlikely that they would have won 8 games so far. He's only got 12 touchdowns, but he's on pace for the most yards he's had in any season in his career, you know, beating his season high last year. He's definitely headed for the most attempts. He's almost already there. And he's probably going to have the fewest interceptions on his career. He's got the lowest interception rate per pass attempt. And he doesn't have the highest passer rating or QBR that we've seen accustomed to him just because he dropped so many points during the weeks that he was kind of immobile. But he does have the lowest sack rate as a pro, despite that time, even though he was severely limited for 4 to 6 weeks from basically week 2 to week 8 with his twisted ankle and MCL sprain. So the coaches have been doing a good job scheming around the injuries and the other deficiencies with the offensive line and the lack of running backs for the middle point of the year. And so I think that now that he's back to nearly full health, we got Thomas Rawls back, and hopefully the offensive line is gelling. Russell Wilson might be able to put up, you know, a string of games like we saw last year.
I'm not Russell Wilson's biggest fan, but in my opinion, he should win the MVP just for having to play behind that god-awful offensive line.
Why aren't you his biggest fan?
Why not? I don't know. Something about the way he carries himself just seems off to me. And it, I don't know. Something about him bothers me. He's a fun player to watch.
Yeah, there's definitely kind of a screen around his kind of public life. On the football field, he's delightful.
He is. I'll never tell anybody he's not a really fun player to watch. But when he tries to tell me that he healed from a concussion because of nanobubbles in his water, that rubs me the wrong way.
Well, I wouldn't take it too personally.
That's all right. I don't know. I still have fun watching him. Hopefully he's not too fun to watch on Sunday. That's all I can say. All right.
Well, you're going to have to get Nick Perry healthier to try to get after him a little bit, I think.
Oh man, that's huge. I mean, the fact that Nick Perry is the best linebacker we have at containing the edge, keeping running backs and rushing quarterbacks inside instead of bouncing out. And without him, you know, we've seen Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick and guys like that just run circles around guys like Clay Matthews because guys like Clay Matthews overcommit. And, man, that without that guy to set the edge, I am nervous about what Russell Wilson's going to do.
Yeah, it would be due if I was
on the sheet. Yeah, I'm shaking in my boots, no joke. So tell me, Lars, if you can, what do you think the Seahawks need to do in order to get a win at Lambeau on Sunday?
Well, I think they need to get the run game going. You know, you know better than I do, but the Packers, you know, they had this excellent run defense early in the year. Seems to have fallen off a little bit. I mean, their overall defense was as high as 6th in Football Outsiders DVOA, and it's now down to 18th and 20th in their kind of weighted figures, their most recent games. And a lot of that has to do with the failures in the run game. They've been giving up 4.8 yards in their last 4 games, you know, just by traditional yard per carry against the run, whereas they were allowing, I think, two flat in the first 4 or 5 games. which was driving that defense, especially with the injuries to the secondary and just the deficiency. And even when the secondary is healthy, it's not the top in the NFL. I think they're allowing the highest yards per attempt by traditional metrics in pass defense. So if Seattle can get the run game going, the pass game really flows off of that for the Seahawks offense. You know, Russell Wilson gets the play action working. He can go deep to Tyler Lockett, find Jimmy Graham and Doug Baldwin in the slot. And there's a lot of different options. And so that really all comes from Thomas Rawls. He's the second-year running back who kind of, you know, burst out of the league last year after Marshawn Lynch went down, and he led the league in a lot of advanced metrics. He only had about 850 yards, but that was done in 8 games because he didn't start the year, and then he ended up breaking his ankle in, I think, the week 13 or 14, which caused him to miss the playoffs. But he came back for this year and then happened to crack his fibula, which is not the same bone that Earl Thomas is out for the season with. He just had like a hairline fracture, which kept him out 4 or 5 weeks, and he took him a while to get going. And especially since CJ Procise has been out, Rawls is now kind of the real main factor for Seattle's running game, especially as well since we waived Chris and Michael, as you well know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Rawls has raised his game the last few weeks. Per Football Outsiders DVOA, he was, I think, negative 11 after the kind of time he spent out because of a terrible game against the Rams when he broke, you know, his little shin bone. But he's been able to work his way into the positives this week, and he's already got a better DVOA, which is kind of a rate stat, than Christian Michael, who's played almost the whole year. But his DYAR, which is basically the kind of advanced version of yards that they use, is only 7 behind Christian Michael, and he's played, I think, 70 fewer snaps. So I expect to see Rawls, you know, right there in the top 5 or 10 running backs in the league by the end of the year, even though he's only played half the time.
All right. So how do you see this game going? Who's going to win? Give me a score prediction.
Well, I guess I would imagine it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think the Packers, despite, you know, the possible explosiveness of the offense, you know, we've seen McCarthy play it really close to the vest, and I think he does that largely to protect the defense, which is giving up more points per drive, I think like 2.9 or something like that points per drive, more than any other team in the league. And so I think they're going to control the game, even if they have an advantage offensively, and that'll keep it a little bit low, which probably favors Seattle. If Seattle can get a few turnovers, I know the Packers also turn it over, I think 12% of drives, which is pretty high, relatively high. So if Seattle can get a turnover or two, they might be able to blow it open, make a 10 or 17-point game. But I think most likely it'll be like 20-17, 17-14, something like that. And, you know, I would favor Seattle, but it really could go either way, given that it's at Lambeau. You know, y'all haven't lost a game there, I think, since 2008 in December. And it's supposed to be snowing, right, and almost freezing. You know, Seattle played the negative temperature game in Minnesota last year, but you know, it was a dry, cold. I was trying to figure out the last time Seattle played in snow. And according to my research, the last time was the 2010 divisional round game against the Bears in the playoffs, which is, for Seattle fans, that's a week after the beast mode run against the Saints. And for y'all, it was a week right before the Jay Cutler MCL Caleb Haney NFC title game. So that was the last time Seattle played any game in the snow. And that was really just like a thin, you know, film of snow, more really in the air than it was on the ground. So we haven't seen Russell Wilson have to deal with that as a pro. Certainly not, you know, the young running backs that Seattle has or any of its receivers. So, you know, before that, you have to go all the way back to the 2007 season when Seattle played in Lambeau in the playoffs to really see a snow game for the Seahawks. So I'm curious to see how that'll affect their offense and defense.
Yeah, I was going to bring up that game in Lambeau. I would love to just see near blizzard-like conditions just totally mess up everybody's game plan.
That's probably my, like, third least favorite game of the Holmgren era. Seattle was up 14-0. I thought it was going to be back to the Super Bowl, and then they lost, I think, 42-20 or something like that. I scored 2 field goals for the last 3 quarters. It was one of my worst memories from the Mike Holmgren period of the Seahawks. But it's all turned around now under Pete Carroll, so I'm looking forward to this next matchup.
Man, for non-division rivals, we sure do have an entertaining history between these two teams.
I love it. I think I wrote in the preseason, I was kind of taking a catalog of Seahawks rivals and trying to kind of pit them, not really in a tournament, but just kind of comparing them one by one against each other. My first one was comparing the Broncos and the Packers. And I got a lot of response. People were like, oh, we're not even rivals with the Packers. We barely ever play them. And I don't know if that was just kind of Seattle fans were in denial, trying to take the high road after the, you know, the last few years. But I think it's a really exciting rivalry. Obviously, there's a connection between the front office. There used to be a lot of, you know, on-field connections with the kind of homegrown kind of mining, you know, the old Ron Wolf era Packers for players. And so there's definitely organizational and on-field sort of like synergy there. And, you know, obviously the games on the field have been really exciting for the last four or five matchups. You know, the Packers got the best of them last year. So I'm looking forward to seeing if Seattle can turn the table again.
All right. Tell the good people listening to our show where they can find you on the internet.
Well, I write for fieldgoals.com. That's G-U-L-L-S instead of the more traditional football Field Goals. That's SB Nation's Seahawks site. You can find me there. I write, you know, two or three times a week, as well as sometimes some live game coverage. Field Goals is also on Twitter, F-I-E-L-D-G-U-L-L-S. And my own personal Twitter is at Beat Valley. Which is a beat, B-A-T underscore valley. So, you know, you can find me tweeting about, you know, music and football and books and all kinds of stuff there. It's not exclusively Seahawks, though.
Wonderful. All right, well, thanks a lot for coming on, Lars.
Word. Thanks, Brian. Say hi to your folks.
All right, thanks again to Lars Russell, our guest for this week. That was a fun interview. He's a good dude. Check him out on Twitter. Check out his writing. I'm sure he's got something up about the Packers on fieldgoals.com. All right, it's time for our breakdown of what's going to happen this Sunday, and it'll start with yours truly with my what the Packers need to do to find their way to victory at Lambeau. And for me, it's pretty simple. The first one is you got to contain Russell Wilson, and if we can sign a blizzard on as a free agent to help us out, that would be very helpful, because as we mentioned, we don't have Nick Perry, and I am legitimately shaking in my boots thinking about Russell Wilson just running circles around Clay Matthews, who just is the king of over pursuit. We got to keep him in the pocket. We can't let him find his way outside of the pocket where he can run for first downs, where he can, just like Aaron Rodgers, make unbelievable cross-body throws that nobody has any business on earth making. That's the way that he makes his money. That's the way he wins his game. We have to keep him in the pocket. I don't care if we don't get any sacks all day long. Just keep him in the pocket. Make him make pocket throws, and we'll have a chance. The other thing, as we just talked about with running backs a little bit ago, play the hot hand. I don't really think overall it matters, you know, Christian Michael versus Ty Montgomery, who gets the most snaps. We all agree it can't be James Starks. As much as we all love Aaron Ripkowski, it can't be him to get the majority of them. That's more of an element of surprise kind of thing. Just play the hot hand, you know, start the first drive with Montgomery, the second drive with Michael, you know, whoever works their way into the game better, stick with them. Just don't do that typical Mike McCarthy thing where you start that opening drive with Ty Montgomery running for 70 yards, and then he doesn't see the ball again until the fourth quarter. Crap like that doesn't work, and it's cost us games many times in the past. So, and then third, I mean, I guess lightly, try to take advantage of that safety issue that they have with Earl Thomas out. Lars was mentioning how, you know, they still have good safeties back there. They still have a good defense overall. But if we can find ways, you know, find a couple deep balls where their safeties can't cheat up and just take things away in the middle, we'll be in much better shape. So those are the things I'm hoping to see, things I'm worried we won't see. Another thing I talked with John about on the phone yesterday was how I'm just totally guarding myself from the end of this season, because I don't want to get all excited about us going to the playoffs and then see it end in utter disappointment for me. So I'm for that reason, and the fact that I just think we're overmatched here, I'm going to say the Seahawks are going to win this one in a close one. I'm going to say 2017 Seattle will eke out a devastating victory at Lambeau on Sunday. So now for John's favorite segment of the show, we've got Dusty Evely, who I know has some stats he wants to share with us.
I do. I've actually tried to pare it down a little this week. Less because
you say that every week.
Well, but I did, but it was more because I just spent most of the day playing Alien Isolation and just didn't really spend a lot of time with stats. So, first of all, Brian, I just want to say that you mentioned Ted maybe signing the Blizzard maybe as a free agent this week. The only question I have would it be like an undrafted Blizzard from a really small school? Because that's the only way he's going to go for it. If it was from like West North Dakota State or something, like he's signing the Blizzard then.
No, I'm talking somebody that played like basketball at UW Green Bay.
Oh yeah. No, he's
total street undrafted free agent.
He's there for a meeting right now. Just right now. He is. That's exciting. Oh, yeah. All right. So for sure. One of the things I wanted to look at this week was just how the Seahawks did basically at home versus away. I know typically they've struggled because they're still a winning team away, but they normally don't do as well away as they do at home. So I kind of want to look at, say, what they've done so far this year. And the gap was actually fairly large. Just looking at a points per game basis, this year, Seahawks have scored 28.7 points per game at home and 15.3 points per game on the road. That's insane. Like they're basically like take whatever their offense is at home and cut it in half, and that's how they are at the road. So you factor into that some of the snow that we're supposed to be getting, and this could be a low scoring game, which is fairly exciting. Mm-hmm. This is something else that was kind of shocking to me. So I look at red zone scoring. I like to look at red zone just touchdown percentage only, because I don't know, that's kind of the bigger thing. You always hate when a team settles for field goals in the red zone, so I kind of want to see how that goes. With a healthy Jimmy Graham this year, Michael earlier than Rawls has been running well, I thought there would be actually a decent red zone team. So it turns out they're 26th in the league at scoring touchdowns in the red zone at 48.8%. So only like less than 50% of the time they're in the red zone do they actually come away with a touchdown. The past three games, they're down at 33.3% have come to touchdowns when they get in the red zone, which is just bonkers to me. Like, I know. So, they're not a good red zone scoring team, which again, with a healthy Jimmy Graham is shocking to me. So those are a couple things I want to look out for this week. As Brian said, we got the snow coming in. Hopefully, I think this is going to be a low-ish scoring game. I do think the Seahawks are going to get loose a little. I think Russell Wilson is going to be able to run a little. I think the Packers are going to be playing a little more zone, but some of those young corners kind of get lost in there. So I see a couple big plays down the field. Russell Wilson get loose for two or three decent sized runs. So I do think they're going to hit their big plays. I do think it's going to be low scoring though. Besides those, I'm going to end up going, say Packers 24-20. I think the loss of Earl Thomas is going to hit them pretty hard. The Seahawks do a whole lot of just kind of funneling towards him. And I don't think they're going to be able to replace that with anyone they have on hand. So I do think the Packers are going to hit theirs as well. So low scoring, Packers on top by just a hair.
All right. And from what I understand, Jordan Peck has a few Twitter questions for us to answer.
We got a couple football and one non-football related question, guys, that we're going to dive into. All right. So first football question. This is from our sister podcast, The Sweep, Pack to the Future. Does no Earl Thomas for the Seahawks equal a for sure win? I'm guessing he means a for sure win for the Packers. Definitely not. I mean, there's no such thing as a for sure win ever in any situation in the NFL. But I mean, them losing Earl Thomas certainly hurts their defense. But they still have Cam Chancellor. They still have Richard Sherman. They have great linebackers in Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Michael Benn on the. I mean, this defense has a lot of playmakers. So they've certainly been taken down a notch with Thomas not out there. But I mean, this is a team that's still more than capable of containing a quarterback like Rodgers and an offense like what we have. So no, there's absolutely no way it's a for sure win.
The only way this ends up being a for sure win is if somehow Jay Cutler lines up at quarterback. So no,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I mean, definitely not for sure a win, as Jordan said. In the NFL, there's no such thing as a for sure win unless you're playing the Browns this year, I guess. But like, Seattle is a very, very good team, and Thomas, the loss of Thomas hurts them. And if you put Chancellor back there, which I don't think they will, but Chancellor can't cover like Thomas can. Like, they're going to have issues. But this is still a very, very good team that is relatively healthy. Like, Thomas is out, but that defense is still pretty healthy. Rawls is back on the offense. Wilson appears to be pretty healthy. Like, their receivers are healthy. Jimmy Graham's healthy. For the most part, it's a pretty healthy team. Absolutely not a for sure win, but does give the Packers a better shot than it would have been if Thomas was healthy for this game.
Definitely. I'd agree with that. Second question, also from the sweep. Does McCarthy unleash Christian Michael against his old team? I guess when you mean unleash, like just giving him the majority of the play time. While I wouldn't mind seeing that, I don't think that's what McCarthy will do. We mentioned it before in the coin toss. He goes with the guy that's had the most experience. I mean, we've seen him throw James Starks out there for most of the season when Ty Montgomery's been the clearly more effective running back. Mm-hmm. And we still saw Starks for the first part of each half last week. So he likes to go with experience. He's going to go with Montgomery more. I think Michael will get a few more carries than he did last week. I think his role in the offense continues to grow. I wouldn't describe him as unleashing him, but if Michael starts the game out running hard and is effective, you know, we saw McCarthy make the adjustment last week, and I don't think he'll be afraid to make it this week. This is a big game. He's going to pull out all the stops.
I mean, I think he will. I honestly do think he will. I think the Seahawks team defensively, that secondary is too good. You can't just rely on the passing game to beat them. You are going to have to establish a run. And the fact that McCarthy had Michael out there for a big fourth down and a couple third down runs shows me that he's starting to trust him a little. Again, we talked about, I think, 11 snaps this past week. That's not much, but they've been easing him into it. I think between him kind of knowing the Seahawks a little bit, McCarthy seeming like he's trusting him a little bit, and the Packers needing balance, like, I do think there's going to be a split between him and Montgomery, but I do think we're going to see Michael on the field quite a bit this week, just out of necessity, if nothing else.
I'm sick of agreeing with Jordan so much today, so I'm going to say he will be unleashed, lead the team in rushes, and and score his first Packer touchdown, and just to spite Jordan, run for like 200 yards. No, he'll be up, I think, up in like the 80s in yards, and he'll score a touchdown this week. And our first non-Aaron Ripkowski running back touchdown of the season will happen.
Just non-Aaron touchdown, right?
Just non-Aaron rushing touchdown. There it is. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. I like it. All right, and one more question. This comes from our friend Matt at Pack to the Future. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Yes.
That was a quick answer from Brian.
That's it.
Okay,
yes.
Here's my...
Yeah, I'm... Go ahead, Jordan. I've got things to say, but you go ahead.
I know you have things to say. I have some things to say, too. It all depends on how you define a Christmas movie. For me, a Christmas movie is a movie that I watch specifically during Christmas time, between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Die Hard is not solely that. I can watch Die Hard in the summertime. In fact, if you, I looked this up again. I've been doing research on the important things for this podcast. The release date for Die Hard was in July. It wasn't even released at Christmas time.
I'm pretty sure It's a Wonderful Life was also released in July, buddy. So take that argument. Just take that argument and shove it. I'm gonna look it up while you talk.
I got to take a step back. I was not ready for that. I'm gonna double check. It's a Wonderful Life. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm gonna double check that.
The Monkey in the Wrench.
But let me say that when you talk about Christmas movies like Elf and let me ask you this: would you watch It's a Wonderful Life in April or May, Dusty?
Are you telling me that you've never watched Home Alone outside of the Christmas season?
I have not.
I don't want to be your friend anymore.
I have not watched Home Alone. Home Alone is a Christmas movie. I've never watched that movie outside of Christmas time. It feels weird.
Oh, what is wrong with you? It's such a good movie.
It's a great movie, but it's a great Christmas movie. Whereas Die Hard I can watch year-round. That's why I say that Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
Dusty, shut him up, please.
So I'm working on It's a Wonderful Life, and it may have come out in December.
So. I'm back, baby.
But that might be a re-release. I'm not entirely sure. So Jordan, you look up that.
Man, I got
some things to say. Jordan's point's an interesting one because I was thinking, man, absolutely 100% Christmas movie. Jordan's idea of a movie you can only watch during Christmas, like that, if that's the classification you want to give it, and that's fine. I totally get it. So you said I wouldn't watch Elf in the middle of July, like because I'm not a serial killer. Like I just. You know, it's that's a Christmas movie. I'm not watching it when it's warm outside.
That's a little harsh.
It's like The Shining or something. Like I watch The Shining when it's snowing. It's not a Christmas movie. It's just cold weather. Anyway, look, man, Die Hard is about a husband and wife coming together during Christmas at a Christmas party. They overcome long odds, just terrible odds, to find their way back to their home, which is their heart, Jordan. And that's what Christmas is all about. Well, Jesus as well. But Christmas is about family and coming together. And I don't know what movie says that more than Die Hard. Listen, man, you got John and Lucy McClane learning to love again, and they see their kids, and then like Reginald Ville Johnson, who I'm pretty sure is just playing Carl Winslow, like learns to kill again. Like you have all of these beautiful stories about reconnecting with your first true love. And it's there in Die Hard, and it takes place during Christmas, and there's Christmas music. It's got Argyle listening to Run DMC's Christmas in Hollis. I just watched the movie earlier today to prep for this. So if you want to talk about prep, Jordan, I got your prep for you right here, fella. So absolutely Christmas movie. Can I watch it in July? Yeah, I can, and I have. I will watch it every single month. Same thing with Lethal Weapon, man. I'll watch that movie anytime. It doesn't make it not a Christmas movie. Do you want to talk about Lethal Weapon now? Do you guys want?
No, sorry. Do you guys want? To... It's been a while since I've seen Lethal Weapon. Does that happen during Christmas?
Absolutely. Like the finale does, at the very least. Like the big fight with like Gary Busey at the end. Like that's during Christmas.
Okay, that's true. By the way, real quick, man. Looked it up while you had your moment. Not only was It's a Wonderful Life released in December, it was released on Christmas Day, 1946. Epitome of a Christmas movie released on the day.
See, Jordan, but that's on you for...
What about the 1992 Batman movie, Batman Returns? Very Christmassy themed, released in June. Yeah. I mean, these things happen.
First of all, I want to go on the record saying I don't like that Jordan's fact checking. I like spewing my nonsense and not having anyone call me on it, Jordan. So that's on you.
Technically, you told me to fact check you, so...
Oh, here we go. I got you, Jordan. All right. Miracle on 34th Street.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Christmas movie, okay. Right? Released in May.
That's what I was thinking of, yeah. Okay.
It doesn't get any more Christmas than Miracle on 34th Street. 1947. Yeah. Released in May.
I'm sorry I lied to you, Jordan. I didn't do as much. I was watching Die Hard too much. I didn't get a chance to like prep all the other Christmas facts. That's fair. But I was rewinding a whole bunch of parts, so it took me like 5 hours to get through.
That's fine. That's fair. All right. I got nothing. Right. My points were made.
Jordan, give us your score prediction for the game so we all can right. move on.
I'm afraid I'm gonna have to agree with Brian on this. I think Seahawks, even without Thomas, are still a better team on really every level. To be honest with you, I think they're. When they're clicking, they're more efficient on offense. You talk about the home road disparity, but you know this team has had trouble with good mobile quarterbacks. I think it's going to be a little higher scoring than certainly this last game was. I just think there's going to be more points put up. I think there's going to be a lot of field goals. You talk about the bad red zone offense for the Seahawks, but they also have a good red zone defense. So I think you see a lot of yards, but not a lot of touchdowns. So a lot of field goals there. I'm picking Seahawks. Unfortunately, to beat the Packers 26-23. Close game, but I think the Seahawks just do enough to get the victory.
All right, let's move on to our final thoughts so we can finally end this farce of a podcast. Okay, so my first one, shout out to Mitchell Henry, former Packers tight end, announced this week that he has been diagnosed with leukemia. Class move from guys like Mike McCarthy saying the Packers will do anything they can to help this guy out. So love, thoughts, prayers, whatever you want to send his way, do it. Good dude. So my other one, I have to address the beef that half of the Packers fan base has with the fact that Ted Thompson let Casey Hayward leave after last season, given the year that he's had now. Seven interceptions, 17 passes deflected, one touchdown on that interception, 102 interception return yards on the season, having a great year for San Diego. And while you look at those stats and you look at the fact that our corners have struggled, I understand why people might be upset. But first of all, I don't remember this outrage when he was let go. I remember some people saying we should have kept him at the price, but I don't remember such outrage. And the reason there wasn't such outrage is the stats that he put up last year. Like, he did almost nothing. Seven passes deflected, so less than half than he has through only 12 games this year versus 16 last year. He had zero interceptions last year. Just, he wasn't that good, and he was outplayed by Quentin Rollins and Demaryius Randall. So, at the time, you're looking at Casey Hayward would have been essentially going into this season at best our fourth cornerback. And why are you going to pay your fourth cornerback what he got paid to go play in San Diego? I don't know. You look at his career stats, 9 career interceptions in 4 years with the Packers, and he has 7 through 12 games with the Chargers. Okay. Like, this is his breakout year. Like, he had a really good rookie year. He didn't do as well. Like, he was injured his second year and then just not a whole lot the next 2 years. I mean, I didn't see the need to bring him back this year. And hindsight being 2020, I get it, but he didn't earn that contract last year to stay with the Packers. So I think we need to move on. I don't think it was the wrong move at the time. Sure, it would be nice to have that production in our secondary, but again, he's also playing on a better defense, so he wouldn't be putting up 7 interceptions and 17 passes deflected if he was on the Packers this year. So can we put that to bed, guys, do you think?
It's our
Like, we can't go back. We can't go back. But I will say that when Hayward left, the group of guys I watched games with, we assumed he was leaving, and we assumed he was leaving because the money was going to be high. His charting numbers, especially from the slot position, were like elite level slot corner. Like, even though the numbers weren't there, he is a very good defender and always has been. And I mean, we've been, you know, I live in Kentucky. I've been watching him since his Vandy days. So I've always been a big fan of his, but when we saw the money he got from San Diego, the first thought, I had a text thread with the guys I watched these games with. It was just, the Packers couldn't have brought him back on that. Like, even with the year he had last year, like, we were very upset. I'm still upset they let him go. He's having a great year. That's great for him. I'm very, very excited. As far as putting it to bed, I mean, yeah, why not? Because we can't go back and do anything. But I still think, I mean, you say it was the right move. I don't think it was the right move based on the money he got. But I do think that dwelling on it doesn't help anything. So I'm fine putting it to bed.
I just feel like there are so many more egregious errors that Ted Thompson has made throughout the past 5 years that letting go of who would have been a fourth string cornerback to start the year, that doesn't even seem to make the top 5 in some of the mistakes that Ted Thompson has made in the past few years. So I don't know. I would think it would have been nice to keep him. I said so at the time, but no, I totally got it. Like, the stats just weren't there. He turned into an interception machine when he moved to San Diego, but he was never really that in Green Bay.
Yeah, I think it's got the move just has more of an unlucky vibe to me. Like, there are points on both sides, but I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, like, you can't foresee a guy that what he did while he was in Green Bay to have this kind of season. You can't predict that. You know, nobody watching Casey Hayward would have predicted that. So yeah, you mentioned the money. I don't disagree with that either, Dusty. But I mean, it's just, it was kind of, even if it's a 50-50 shot, it's just, that's not the move Ted makes, and that's the move Ted's gonna make. So it's, yeah, I mean, you're right. There's no point really talking about it anymore because there's nothing you can do. But it's tough.
Yeah. So maybe next week I'll talk about some of the much, much worse things that Ted has done over the past few years, and we can talk about that instead and ridicule him for things that I think he deserves to be ridiculed about.
Yeah, get a list. Won't that be joyous?
Oh, baby. All right. My final thoughts will be depressing this week. All right. So make sure you're listening to our sister podcast, The Sweep. Really good stuff. Have a new intro this week that they're very proud of. So go check them out. Check out our website at packtothefuture.com. You can find me on Twitter at PTTF_Brian. And of course, our podcast Twitter at PTTF_podcast. Dusty, final thoughts.
I got 3 and I'm going to try to make them quick. So every week I look at the cheapest tickets of the week. Just to toot my own horn for a second here. We were talking about this pre-show. So for, I think, $8 last week, as of like last Wednesday, you could have gone to the Indianapolis Colts at New York Jets game. I think leading up to the game, you could have got them for a buck. And that game was an absolute train wreck. We wanted Jordan to go to that so bad. And then I think he would have quit and like put contracts on our head if we had actually gone to that game. They're just awful. But listen, man, when I bring this to you, when I bring you the cheapest tickets of the week, this is what I want. I want just utter despair. I want terrible games. Maybe not blowouts, but maybe just guys like quarterbacks missing receivers by 15 yards. Like, that's what I want.
Lovely.
That's what I want. I don't want a good game. I want a bad game. And guys, I got news for you. The game this week is going to be bad. We have got the 4-7-1 Cincinnati Bengals rolling into Cleveland to battle the 0-12 Browns, and that ticket will cost you $11.
Lovely.
So if you are in that area, this is not, if you can believe it, not the first time the Browns have come up on this segment. if you can go to this game, man, Dalton looks garbage this year, especially without Green. Like, Eifert's actually back, and he looks fine, but Green's gone, and Dalton's terrible, and I don't know, like, who's trotting out for the Browns. What was Keanu Reeves' movie and the name of the Replacements? Whatever his name was in the Replacements, he might be playing.
It's one of the best Christmas movies I've ever seen.
It is, yeah. It's not Johnny Utah, because he was Point Break.
That's right.
Anyway, that game's going to be atrocious, and it's $11. So, you know, watch that game. It's going to be awful. Second thought, actually Packers-related. We talked a little bit about this already today, but man, James Starks. I love James Starks. I'll always remember 2010, the game in Philly, the playoff run we had, the Super Bowl run we had with James Starks, and what he's done since then, man. Like, he's exceeded expectations. I think we can clearly say, given the expectations for him when he came to the Packers, he has sufficiently exceeded them. I think we can also agree he is way outlasted his time. He doesn't have that burst there anymore. He was never overly fast, but the strength is gone. The explosion's gone. He's not the same back that he was, and that's fine, but we just need to move on. So I just want to say there's a whole lot of that kind of goes into when you say, you know, James Starks doesn't need any snaps anymore, and there's some bitterness there. Just remember, man, it's not James Starks' fault. He's going out there. He's still getting a paycheck. He's still on the Packers. They ask him to run out there. He's doing his best. I love James Starks. I'll always love him. You can say you love him and still say we need to move on from him. So no ill will against James Starks whatsoever, but he does not need to be getting as many snaps as he does anymore. But I always love you, buddy. Last thought. Man, I watched a horror movie this past week. It actually comes out on DVD. This next week, it's the 15th, I think it comes out. It's called The Barn. It's like a throwback to like 80s monster slasher movies. And it's bonkers awesome. It's a super small production. The soundtrack is actually done by the ex-drummer from Evanescence, just because he thought the movie looked really, really cool, which was kind of exciting. Like, for a small budget movie, the effects are awesome. It's got this like artificial film grain to it as well, so it kind of looks like an old kind of grindhousey movie. It's awesome. It's set on Halloween. Great atmosphere. It's like the atmosphere from the trick-or-treating scene from Halloween 3, but like through the whole movie. it's just awesome, man. The DVD comes out. I think it's thebarnmerch.com is where you can get it. Limited release, again, super low budget. I've been talking to the director who kind of handles everything. Really, really cool guy. Super small production. Great, great horror movie. Really perfect Halloween movie. So make sure you check that out. It's called The Barn, and I'm just madly, madly in love with it. You can find me on Twitter at Dusty Evely. And guys, just remember, if you like the podcast, just go to iTunes and just give us a rate and review. It really helps other people kind of see our stuff, helps us get out there a little more. So just do that if you could. Just takes a few seconds. Just remember to do that.
Dusty, you were thinking of Shane Falco. I feel upset that I forgot that name.
It's a solid name. That's a really good name.
Keanu Reeves with Shane Falco in Replacements.
It's a good name. Yeah.
All right, I got a couple final thoughts, guys. This morning, I finally pulled the trigger, got my ticket, Star Wars Rogue One, next Thursday at 10:30 at night.
Nice.
It's a school night. It's nice. A school night for me. I feel rebellious. It's gonna be fantastic. Probably the first of four or five times that I see it in the theaters. So I'm very
Jordan
very
Peck. It's 10:30. Do your parents know where you are?
They will not. They'll think I'm in bed.
I have a child tracker on Jordan. I know where he is at all times.
That's what that
is. That what that thing is on his ear? I didn't know that.
He hadn't noticed until now.
I was wondering what the beeping was every night at 10 o'clock.
Thanks, Dusty. Now I got to get a new one.
You're welcome.
All right. Last final thought. That's kind of redundant. My final thought for the evening. I like to do some standings watching. Obviously, the Packers, where they're at, they need some help to begin into the playoffs. So just want to be your quick guide to let you all know who you should be rooting for. So Packers don't play until 4:25 Eastern. But if you're wanting to watch the 1 o'clock games, you may want to watch the Washington Philly game. We are Eagles fans for that one. Obviously, we're rooting for Detroit and Minnesota to lose, so that makes us Bears fans and Jacksonville Jaguars fans. So get out your Cutler jerseys.
Get your
Blake
break.
Bortles jerseys.
I'm always a Jaguars fan, my brother.
Like, I don't care about the fact that we have to cheer for them in those games, but couldn't it be some better teams that, like, actually might have a chance at pulling those upsets? Jeez.
So we got Bortles. I shouldn't say Cutler. It's Bortles and Barkley. It's the new new USA police show, ready to send us to the playoffs. All right, we got those guys 4:25 while they're playing with the same time as the Packers. We're rooting for the Saints to beat the Buccaneers for that outside shot of the wild card, and then also we have to be Cowboys fans to beat the Giants. So Cowboys, Jaguars, Saints, Eagles, and Bears. Those are the teams we're rooting for, guys.
So basically, just pick all the teams that you would normally not root for.
That's pretty much how this week has turned out. Fortunately, we don't have to root for Seattle, so that's good.
You got to root for George W. Bush's axis of evil this week.
I like it.
W. All right. That is all we've got for this week, guys. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter. Rate us on iTunes. We appreciate it. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.